This Real Ag Radio podcast is brought to you by Brevant Seeds, the latest technology locally tested. Brevant works hard to make your choice easy.
It's time for Real Ag Radio on Rural Radio Channel 147 on Sirius XM. Ag Radio and RealAgCulture.com is your home for insight and analysis of the issues that are impacting your farm business. Let's get real and get connected with Real Ag Radio. Welcome to Real Ag Radio here on Rural Radio 147 on Sirius XM. Sean Haney, your host here on this Monday edition of the show. Hey, hope you had yourselves a great weekend. And you're hitting the beginning of the week fresh and wheels down and you are running. So I know that's how I felt this morning after a very, very relaxing weekend. Hey, thanks so much for making Real Ag Radio and Rural Radio 147 a part of your workday. Greatly appreciate it. We got a great lineup, not just on this show on a daily basis, but across the channel every single day. Check it out, and glad you're a part of it. Okay, let's get to today's lineup. It's a pretty grand one. Lots of things to talk about. We've got Clint Yerke here today from the Canola Council of Canada. It is Canola Week. You can find out about the meeting by going to canolaweek2020.com and get yourself registered. Clint joined me last week in a conversation with Kara Oosterhuis. We talked about what were some of the yield robbers of 2020 on the canola crop. So looking forward to hearing from Clint on that. We also got Rob Miller here from BSF Canada to talk about pre- and post-harvest soybean or weed control in soybeans. We've also got Tom and Jason. Tom Wolf and Jason DeVoe will be with us. And we're going to hear that. That's from last week's agronomist episode. That is our primetime show on Monday nights. And so I'm going to play you a little bit of a clip of that. As well, today we are going to hear from Jen Walker. She's with Alberta Pulse Growers talking about getting ready for the 2021 growing season. So some great stuff today on the show. Listen, if you have feedback, you can send me an email, shaney@realagriculture.com. Or on social media, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram. Our username there is @RealAgriculture. Make sure you give us a follow, right? You should be. How are you not following us on those social media platforms? You don't want to miss anything. That's the best way to keep up to date. As well, actually, find us on YouTube and become a subscriber there as well. Or you can call the Real Ag Listener line. We are 855-776-6147. Something I'm very interested in getting your feedback on. It affects really farmers across the country. And that was Saturday's surprise announcement of dairy compensation for market access that was given up in the CETA and CPTPP deals. You're going to hear more about this on tomorrow's show. But Saturday, I kind of did a bit of a workout, missed a phone call as I was on the bike, it was an Ottawa number, called it back, and being notified that there's a press conference coming up at 2 Eastern, and it was a big one. So Agriculture Minister Marie-Claude Bebeau put $691 million towards egg, chicken, turkey, so the poultry sector, as well as topped up the dairy compensation. So basically, after receiving $345 million that was announced last year, be paid out over 10 years, the minister also announced $468 million to be paid to dairy before the end of March, as well as $469 million in the 21-22 year and $468 million in the 22-23 year. So basically pay the remaining balance over 3 years instead of 10. Put that in perspective, that's an 80-head dairy getting about $38,000 per year. So we're going to talk about that more tomorrow, but I know you have an opinion, whether you're a dairy farmer, you're in supply management, or you're out of it, you'll have an opinion on this trade compensation that was committed to on Saturday. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got Jen Walker of Alberta Pulse Growers. We're talking getting ready for 2021. You're listening to Real Ag Radio on Rural Radio 147.
SeedNet is currently seeking seed growers across the Canadian prairies. Do you want access to pedigreed seed of all the SeedNet varieties? seed growers wanting to expand their sales options can gain access to almost all of our current and future varieties of cereals, pulses, and special crops. Interested? Apply directly to the office by calling 403-715-9771 or emailing office@seednet.ca.
Want to get the best out of your soybean crops? Whether you've been growing them for a generation or are just starting into soybeans, find what you need to know at soybeanschool.com. You'll see videos on growing tips, pest control, and much more from specialists across the region, all in one place. Easy for you to access from your desktop, tablet, or mobile phone. Maximize your yields by staying up to date with the Soybean School, presented by BASF, Pride Seeds, and Syngenta Canada.
I'm Lindsay Smith, host of the Agronomy Geeks podcast on realagriculture.com, and we're back at it with another season of one of the nerdiest shows on the internet, and I love it. Join me as we profile some of the most influential contributors in the field of agronomy, as well as some of the unsung heroes of agriculture. That's the Agronomy Geeks podcast, available on realagriculture.com, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to Real Ag Radio. Let's get hopping here with Agronomy Monday. Hey, this segment's brought to you by The Pulse School on realagriculture.com. It is sponsored by BASF Canada. So whether you're growing lentils, chickpeas, faba beans, field peas, we've got the agronomic content for you. Check it out at pulseschool.com. Speaking of pulses, let's hear a recent Pulse School episode that was recorded by Kara Oosterhouse of realagriculture.com. She had a conversation with Jen Walker, research director with Alberta Pulse Growers.
So we are now at the kind of getting towards the end of the year, and we are looking at planning for next year. Now, this past year, especially in Alberta, parts of Saskatchewan and Manitoba, had kind of a wet year. There were some pockets that really seen a lot of moisture. So it leads us to the question, while we dealt with some aphanomyces, but it leads us to the question, how can we plan for next year? What are some of the things you can tell us?
Well, a farmer's work is never done, are they, Kara? There's no rest for the wicked, I guess. You're absolutely right. And we saw a lot of actually variability across the province last year, where in the south of the province, the extra moisture was actually really awesome. And we saw some really incredible pulse yields, particularly in dryland, peas, lentils, that kind of stuff. And of course, as we move north across the province, there was lots of pockets where we unfortunately did have a lot of moisture. And one of the consequences of that is we see just kind of the areas in our fields that perhaps have poor drainage, and we did see, you know, definitely some root rot diseases later in the season. And so why that's important to kind of look backwards while we look forwards is for planning purposes, like you said. And so when people are looking at building their rotations and securing seed supplies for the 2021 growing season, there's just some really, I think, beneficial things that we can think about. The first one is kind of when you're looking at what your rotation would be ideally. We know that sometimes we can't always hit that ideal. And so, for example, one of the fields that we at our farm are wanting to put peas on next year was nasty this year in terms of the drowned out locations. It's some heavier soil, a little bit of gumbo, which is really nasty stuff. And I'm actually thinking seriously that we may need to switch up our ideal rotation a little bit, just because that's not an ideal piece of land, particularly for peas, which is what we grow on our farm. So pulse crops traditionally like a little bit of a lighter soil, good drainage. The really nasty root diseases need water to move. And they remain in the soil for a really long time. So aphanomyces has a super, super amazing spore, and it's really, really good at living for a really long time. And so one of the things that we're learning through all of the good research that's happening, headed mostly by Shannon Chatterton out of Ag Canada at Lethbridge, in concert with other scientists in Saskatchewan and Manitoba, is that these ooze borers, they do live a really, really long time. And so kind of the idea with any disease management is you don't want to feed that enemy, I like to call them, don't feed the enemy. So if we can extend some of those rotations and so say not put peas on that piece of land because it is a bit of a higher risk, and then either look at putting in alternative pulse crops, so faba beans, chickpeas, soybeans, depending on the area of the province that you live in, you know, those are potential alternatives if you're still looking to kind of maintain that pulse in your rotation. The other thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to go and specifically soil test those low spots in the field that I want to plant my peas or my lentils in, and actually see what the Aspanomyces is there. So we don't have a perfect soil test, but a presence or absence will still give us some really good information. Something else that we've learned in the last little while is that a lot of these soil-borne diseases can also live and propagate themselves on some weed species. So this last year, again, really wet. The chickweed was nasty in some fields underneath the canopy. You know, when you're driving the combine, you can see them growing there. And Aphanomyces spores can actually live on some of those chickweed, stinkweed, shepherd's purse, those kind of things. And so if we had a really good weed problem underneath the canopy in the field that we want to plant peas in, again, a little bit of a higher risk. So if you go to our website, we have some great information on some of those, you know, kind of risk factors. So, you know, when we're thinking ahead about planting, obviously field selection is going to be a really big one. Check your seed. Make sure you have really healthy seed. We're finding a little bit of information about, you know, nutrition and making sure that we have healthy plants that can withstand that. So, you know, I think things are becoming more complicated, but we can still have some good successes with pulse crops. I know that some people are a little bit worried that, oh, we can't ever grow peas again, but it's just a little bit of careful planning. Know your land, scout your fields, those kind of things.
And how does variety selection play into this?
So at present, we don't have any resistant varieties of pulses to the root rot diseases. Some show more susceptibility than others, but it's really not something that we can say, you know, like a club root resistant variety that you can go and choose. So make sure you have healthy seed. One of the things with pulse crops is because they outcross over time, if you reuse your seed, so save your seed and use it, say, 5 years in a row, we actually lose some of the vigor of that original variety. And so it's something to consider when you're making sure that you have your seed and you're checking it for your germination is actually how many generations have you used? And it may be good to refresh and get some certified seed again, just so that we're making sure that we kind of can kick ourselves off on the best foot.
Absolutely. And you guys recently launched a new agronomy app. Do you want to talk a bit about it?
We did. It was actually a relaunch. So 3 years ago, we started kind of an online regional variety trial app that showed all of the varieties across the province, and you could go in and look at the seeding date, the fertility at the soil test, and what herbicides were used at each specific site, as well as kind of the backing up into your whole zone or even the province level. Now we've kind of ramped that up a little bit, and I think it's a perfect time, as you well know, because of COVID, for digital platforms are becoming huge. And so one of the things that was important to us is that people had good information at their fingertips. And so on the app, it's kind of been set up to really be a quick reference to some of the agronomy questions that we come up with. So for example, if you download it, if you don't have it, or if you refresh it, you know, now one of the articles that we've got is fall versus spring soil sampling. You can still get all your good variety information there at the provincial level, at the regional level, as well as at the closest variety or regional site to you. There's also this really crazy thing called Ask an Expert, and my picture will be beside it, which doesn't mean I'm the expert. It means that I know a lot of people who are experts. And so a really just quick opportunity, hey, I'm out in my field, you know, shoot us a message and we can get back to you and answer that very specific question. So it's kind of like having an agronomist in your pocket. So we're hopeful that it will be a really good support tool. We encourage people to download it and to give us feedback on it. What's missing? What do you like? What do you not like?
Absolutely. Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just think thanks for doing this and for making sure and being just a really positive voice in agriculture. And I know we've come through some really challenging seasons, but there really is a larger group and we're in this together. And you know, my job at Alberta Pulse and our director's job is really to just be supportive of the whole system. So
whether it's pulses, wheat, canola, corn, soybeans, it really is that time of the year where people are thinking about what varieties they're going to be growing next year, as we just heard from a pulse perspective. And a lot of things to take into consideration. Here's a good segue for you. Tonight on The Agronomists, we are going to be talking about cereal variety selection. And our guests are going to be Jeremy Boychin of Alberta Wheat and Barley Commissions, as well as Peter Wheat Pete Johnson, who you hear frequently on this show. He's the Real Agriculture Agronomist. And we're going to have some fun. We're going to play some. Actually, I have a clip we're going to play tonight, which was one of the very first videos I ever filmed, going back to 2009 in January. Wow. That's a relic. Way out of the past. And it's not a, I was pretty green, but the information is still sound. And we're going to have a lot of fun tonight. So check it out, 8 p.m. Eastern, 6 o'clock Mountain on realagriculture.com/agronomist. As well, you can find it on all of our social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube as well. So, hey, we've got more Agronomic Monday coming up. You're listening to Real Ag Radio, and we're on Rural Radio 147 on Sirius XM. Hi, I'm Sean Haney with Real Agriculture and Real Ag Radio. Do you know that Real Agriculture does a live, interactive broadcast every day at 3 p.m. Eastern? Every weekday, we talk to a variety of different people about farming, economics, farm management, policy, and a whole lot more. The best part of it is that you get to join in the conversation while it's happening through YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, or realagriculture.com/live. Join us at 3 p.m. Eastern for Real Ag Live. Canola and its beautiful bright yellow flower blankets the prairies every growing season with 20 million plus acres. There's one place you need to go to get all your canola agronomic information, canolaschool.com. That's where you'll find all you need to know about seeding, disease, weeds and insects, harvest and marketing. Engaging and informative content all at your fingertips when you need the information. Visit canolaschool.com, brought to you by Invigor Hybrid Canola and BASF Canada. And welcome back to Real Ag Radio here on Agronomic Monday. This segment brought to you by the Soybean School. It is sponsored by Pride Seeds, Aragon LQ Pre-Harvest Weed Control, and Fortenza Vibrance Max. Go to soybeanschool.com and you can find our, well, all of our videos on soybean agronomy. And there's Western Canadian episodes, there's Eastern Canadian episodes, there's episodes that fit the entire country, even for some of our American friends as well. Go to soybeanschool.com. We're now going to hear a conversation that realagriculture.com's Bern Tobin had with Rob Miller of BASF as they chat soybeans.
Bernard Tobin here on Soybean School, joined by Rob Miller from BASF. Rob, how's it going?
Pretty good. How you doing, Bern?
I'm doing great. Hey, it's great to be back out in the field. We're at the Mary Hill Research Station here and standing in some plots. And I want to talk today about pre versus post weed control. You know, it's an interesting year and how it's developed, but I guess it really starts from a weed control perspective with a good plan.
Absolutely. So in terms of herbicide-resistant weeds, such as glyphosate-resistant Canada fleabane or even water hemp, a good solid pre-program is critical to success and to maximize your yield potential. So even if you don't have some of those weeds, you always want to make sure you have a good plan and also plan to have some multiple modes of effective action, especially in that pre-emerge program.
Talk about the plot you got here. You've got a pre and a post plot. A lot of difference here, some timing and you know, some plant differences here.
Yep, definitely. So where I'm standing here is in a what we call a running check. So this is kind of an untreated. To my right is a total post program, and to my left was a pre-emerge program. Only one shot, so only pre, only post, only. This was done about 4 weeks ago. You can see overall really good weed control, even considering we've had a very dry spring. We didn't get some of the activating rains, but you can really see that This just buys you a little bit more time. You can incorporate a few different modes of action in there to control some of these weed species versus relying on a total post program as well.
So Rob, we see some carcasses, some weed carcasses in the post. Obviously you had some weed control here. Talk about the weed-free period here. Obviously there might be some yield impacts if we're spraying that late in post?
Yes, definitely. So there's research that's been done that the critical weed-free period is from the first to third trifoliate, but more recent research has been shown that critical weed-free period is very similar to corn. It's from emergence all the way up to the fourth trifoliate. And when you're relying on a total post program like we have here, this was sprayed around 10 days ago, so it might look really good at plant or at harvest, whereas, and you can really see that, you know, there's some carcasses there, but we're getting that second flush. So this didn't have a residual component applied post-emerge, so you're getting that second flush. It's still probably going to have another shot of an in-crop herbicide before canopy closure, so it still is a two-pass program. But you can really see that, you know, those weeds, especially in a dry year that we've had this year, is competing with the soybean crop. And we may not see it now, but usually later on in the season, another couple weeks from now, usually the start of August, is where we really start to see differences in the plant height. So although it's at roughly the fourth trifoliate stage now, when we look at it in August, you'll see the plants that, or the plots that had a pre-treatment are actually bushier beans. So they didn't have that early season weed competition, more robust, and set yourself up for success going into the month of August.
Now, it's been a dry year, and a lot of people complain that, hey, you know, pre's, you know, quite often just sit there and don't do enough. But, yep. Hey, they're there and they're still active, right?
Yes, absolutely. So whether it's in corn or soybeans, we have a number of plots here where we didn't receive that activating rain within the first week. And we went in there with just a straight glyphosate application, took out that initial flush, and once the rains did come, we saw that activated the herbicides and actually had really good weed control. And that's the case in some of the other plots that we'll show later. But some people say, well, you know, I didn't get the rain to activate it, I just threw my money away. And for most herbicides, not all, but for most herbicides, they don't get broken down by sunlight, so then they're still there. So when the rains do come, they activate and provide that residual activity, especially for the later emerging flushes. So it buys you a little bit more time. We haven't had that many optimal spray days this year. We've had high temperatures, we've had windy conditions like we have now. We're so busy trying to get the Fusarium head blight products on the wheat, and same with trying to wrap up corn. Having that residual program down, especially pre-emerge, buys you more time. So it allows the sprayer to wrap up some of the other crops. When you come back to the sprayer, to the beans, it's not a complete mess. Buys you a little bit more time, and you can wait a little bit for that optimal day. It takes out that urgency as well, because the weeds aren't competing with that crop.
Final question, Rob, and that is a two-pass program. Typically, you prescribe a two-pass. Will you come back with two passes, second pass on both of these?
Probably will come back with a second pass for both. If I was a farmer, based on this weed pressure that we have at this research farm, you know, we'd probably come back in here with a week or 10 days, depending on which, if it's IPs or just straight glyphosate. But that also allows you to, you know, it's mostly just the grasses. They're smaller, they're actively growing. You can really just do a two-pass program. So whether you're relying on total post or pre followed by post, it's really a two-pass program for multiple weed control and the most consistent weed control and the best control that you can get on some of these resistant biotypes.
Trying to keep those fields clean, always a big task, whether it's soybeans or any of these crops. So I appreciate that report from Byrne and Rob Miller of BSF. You know, we've got more Agronomic Monday coming up here. You're listening to Real Ag Radio on Rural Radio 147, and we're on Sirius XM.
The Pulse School on realagriculture.com has everything you need to get your crop off to a great start and a strong finish. Whether you're growing chickpeas, fava beans, lentils, or peas, you'll get all the latest and best agronomic information at pulseschool.com. A library of top-notch agronomy videos from industry experts available on demand at your fingertips. Visit the Pulse School, brought to you by BASF on realagriculture.com.
Hi, this is Bernard Tobin with RealAgriculture.com. You know, there's a lot going on in Canadian agriculture. At RealAgriculture.com, we aim to keep you up to speed on it all with our free daily email. We cover all the latest Canadian agriculture news, agronomy, markets, animal agriculture, and a lot more. Visit RealAgriculture.com/subscribe and sign up for our email newsletters covering a host of ag topics in Canada and beyond.
And welcome back to Real Ag Radio here on Agronomic Monday. Hope you're having yourself a great start to the week. This segment is brought to you by the Canola School. It is sponsored by Invigor Hybrid Canola and BSF Canada. And you can find all of our canola-based agronomy. There's a lot of videos. It is a library of canola agronomic content. You can't find anything else like it anywhere else. Go to canolaschool.com. Last Friday on our Real Ag Live streaming show, we had Clint Yerke from the Canola Council of Canada on the show. And it's canola week this week. The big conference going on virtually, I'm going to talk about after you hear part of our conversation. But Clint wanted to discuss with Kara Oosterhuis and I, what were some of the yield robbers of 2020 as we look back on this canola crop? Here's Kara Oosterhuis and myself and Clint Yerke. Clint, let's get on to some of the yield robbers of 2020. You know, definitely a different year than 2019. Talk about some of the factors that you and your agronomist colleagues at Council have sort of identified as those things that kind of stole some yield from us on the 20 crop.
Yeah, this is an exercise that we try to do every year to do a wrap up of how the growing season went. What were the big challenges? What were the things that limited our yield potential? I think that everyone knows that we have a yield goal for the industry in by 2025 to hit 52 bushels per acre, and it is a stretch goal. it's going to require a lot of things to go right, I think, for us to hit that goal. But doing an analysis of what took us away from hitting that yield potential every year is definitely worth our time. And so for 2020, you're right. It was quite a different season compared to 2019, and a lot of the factors that had a big impact on our yield were related to weather, which is not any surprise. But we try to look at these things from a national point of view. Like, I'm right here in Lloydminster, and I have a pretty good idea of what the weather was like for my own home family farm. But trying to put all that together with what happened in the Red River Valley and the Peace River Valley and try to make sense of why did we wind up with the yield that we did is actually kind of an interesting exercise.
Is heat really the, it definitely hurt some of the cereal crop in certain regions. Based on the timing of seeding, did that heat impact the flowering period? Was that a yield robber?
It is, and actually that is our number one identified yield robber for this growing season.
What do I win?
Very good.
What do I win?
full points for you. We'll get you a Tim's card.
Nice. Go ahead.
But yeah, certainly once you get temperatures, daytime temperatures in the 30-degree range, and even more importantly, it's the nighttime temperatures above 25 degrees Celsius, then that really affects the plant's ability to produce pollen, for that pollen to actually fertilize the ovules and produce seed, and for that seed to mature and grow. Heat is not canola's friend. Canola is a cool season crop, and so across a lot of the southern latitudes, we did have some pretty warm days and warm evenings that impacted our yield. So that is one of the big ones.
Verticillium was a fairly big one across Manitoba this year. I know I heard lots of, Justine was the one doing a lot of work on it, but is there any reason why verticillium was so big this year?
So that is a great question. Verticillium is a new disease to us. Like, it was only found in Canada for the first time back in 2014. And in 2015, the federal government didn't know if this was going to be a pest that needed to be regulated, And so they did a survey across the prairies, right from Manitoba to British Columbia. Actually, right from coast to coast. They were even surveying out in the Atlantic provinces. And what they found is that this pathogen is pretty widespread. It's most heavily concentrated in Manitoba, but it is found everywhere. But we don't really have a good idea of what its impact is on yield. Like there have been some studies that have been done in Europe where they've looked at it in winter canola and spring canola, and they do find that there is some yield impact. But here in the prairies, like our growing season is just so short. Like it usually comes in fairly late. So the thought had been is that maybe it's not affecting that much yield. But over the last 2 years, especially in Western Manitoba, they've been doing quite a bit of surveying work, and we're finding it a lot more easily than what we would like to. So it did make the list for yield robbers this year, that it potentially has an impact, but exactly how much we likely won't know until next year once we got a lot of those diseased yield trials wrapped up for verticillium. But it's a new one, and it's causing us some concern.
Correct?
It's in some ways it's a lot like clubroot in that it sits in the soil and it lasts for a long time. It infects the roots, but where it's different than clubroot, it doesn't stay in the root. It moves up into the stem, and once it gets into the stem and it starts reproducing, it produces these new resting bodies called microsclerotia. This is where it potentially could be a little more difficult to control than clubroot, is that once we go through the harvest operation, our machinery shouldn't be picking up roots. And so that's why clubroot hopefully stays kind of where it's at. But this, we put stems through combines, and so they act as great dispersal mechanisms for this pathogen. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay. So we got a comment here from your colleague, Greg Sekulik, who says overnight temperatures as high as 16 degrees C is where we start to see the pollination impact happen, referring to some of the temperatures. Got a question here from Brand Tideman. Did cleavers make the list? It seemed like a good, bad cleavers year, at least in central Alberta. What can you tell us about cleavers?
Cleavers didn't make the list, so I think that Brianne must be mistaken. So we'll just stop it right there. No, I'm joking. I'm joking.
Brianne doesn't pay attention to words.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, no. Yeah, so it is certainly a weed that we're concerned about, and it does have an impact upon the crop. But for 2020, we didn't see it as being that different than in previous years, and so it didn't make our major list for what took away most of the yield.
Okay, what else is on that list then?
Well, if you're certainly in northwest Saskatchewan and most of Alberta, moisture was certainly a bigger concern for a lot of the areas, and excess moisture. And so acres were lost due to water remaining in the soil and in a surface fashion as well. So soggy soil conditions that persisted for a long period of time, acreage was reduced. And but even across a lot of the prairies, because unlike last year where it was a really dry start for a good proportion of the prairies, this year we started with good soil moisture, and even in some cases, maybe even excess soil moisture. But particularly the eastern and southern areas, that soil moisture did disappear, and the roots didn't develop as well as we would have liked to. We would have liked to see them go deeper than where they were at. So excess moisture, soggy conditions had a big impact on us, unfortunately. I know in my own family farm here in Lloydminster, we figured that we had some fields where we lost 15% of the acres just due to sloughs becoming really large and coalescing and expanding. And I know that certainly north of Edmonton, that became whole fields that were in that similar type of situation. So that was a big one for a lot of the Northwest.
So where are we at with clubroot? Were numbers, like, was there thresholds you were paying attention to? Were they higher or lower this year?
Yeah. So clubroot every year gets bigger. And and particularly it being a wetter year in Alberta, that is reflected. You know, like we do disease surveys every year as an industry largely run by the provincial governments and some of the universities. And those surveys actually don't pick up club root all that often in them when they're just going out into random fields across Alberta. But the last couple of years now, they're being found a lot more regularly. And so that is concerning. Like we're certainly seeing the numbers increasing. I believe that there were three new counties that were added in 2020 for the presence of club root. And we have been finding more fields of resistant varieties, particularly in that central Edmonton area, that where club root is now showing up in the resistant varieties. And so that is a big concern. Like if our resistant varieties are not providing long-term control of this disease, then we really need to come up with new strategies here very soon.
It's really aggressive, right? We just continue to see it, you know, really one spread, and then the genetics is like, it's, we want that to be the solution so badly, but it just, you know, it's having a hard, you know, even the companies are having a hard time keeping ahead of it. It's a real bugger.
It's such a weird disease. Like it's not a fungus. We kind of think of it in, like a fungus, but it doesn't act that way. Like once it gets into the plant, it just forms this, it's called a plasmodial mass. It's just this big organism that has a whole bunch of nuclei and in that form, it changes the hormonal balance of the plant and kind of takes over what the plant is doing and makes just these roots grow into these big, ugly clumps. But when it does that, it has this ability to exchange genetic information. And it's not really well understood, but somehow this pathogen just keeps changing genetically. So if we come up with a resistant solution, we think, hey, this is going to work great. But no, the pathogen goes and changes again. And so suddenly our resistance genes don't seem to be working as well as they should have been. And so it's tough. Like we need more solutions for this. And the only way that we can control this disease is with complicated solutions right now, that whole integrated pest management approach of sanitizing equipment, using resistant varieties, longer rotations, watching weeds in your fields and managing those. Like it's not just one thing. We need to be doing everything in order to kind of stay ahead of it at this point in time.
Those aren't simple though. Like I think that's part of the problem, right? Those aren't simple solutions. That's why I sort of alluded to the fact people want the genetics to be the solution because that's easy. I buy variety X, but it's just, unfortunately, it's not that way.
But genetics is probably our most effective tool still at this point in time. And so much so that like I've been talking about how the genetics can be overcome by the pathogen and that, but if we use genetics in the right way, it can be actually very effective. Like if you start using genetics before the pathogen actually even arrives in your field, then that's a good way of actually keeping that disease down to a minimum. And preventing it from becoming a bigger problem. And so that's something that we would like to see the entire farming community adopt is start using club root resistant varieties now. Because every time we use a susceptible variety, you're kind of playing with fire. You don't know if it's in your field or your neighbor's field or within your community. Like it could be there. You grow a susceptible variety and now suddenly you're in a whole different management strategy for the disease.
If you want to hear our entire conversation with Clint Yerke of the Canola Council of Canada, go to realagriculture.com/live. And of course, it is Canola Week this week. I believe there's still time to register. Go to canolaweek2020.com and get registered for a really, really deep scientific, research-oriented deep dive into the crop of canola. So please check it out. We've got more coming up here on Agronomic Monday on Real Ag Radio, Rural Radio 147. We'll be right back right after this.
If you only listen to Real Ag Radio, you only get half the picture. For greater insight into the issues that affect farming, tune in to realagriculture.com. Crops, livestock, machinery, farm management and the markets, even food and travel. Real Agriculture Online digs deeper into the topics that affect the way you work and live. So get connected today. Read, watch, and listen to the people who know at realagriculture.com.
Ready to take your corn crop to the next level? The Corn School on realagriculture.com offers you expert agronomic advice along with all the latest research in a free online video library available to you anywhere, anytime. Markets, agronomy, research, and insight all in one place. Keep your crop ahead of the curve with The Corn School on realagriculture.com. Brought to you by Headline Amp Fungicide and Pride Seeds.
In the last decade plus, we've seen quite a significant rise in genetic potential for yield with some of these newer varieties.
Look forward to bigger yields and better protein profiles as well.
On a per ton basis, because we're producing more and more grain on every acre of land, our energy use in the last 30 years has declined by 30%. That's an incredible story.
Keep up with all the latest in wheat at the Wheat School on realagriculture.com. Welcome back to Real Ag Radio. We're going to finish up today's Agronomic Monday show by playing a fun piece of last Monday's agronomist show. This segment's brought to you by the Wheat School. It is sponsored by Alberta Wheat, Syngenta Canada, and C&M Seeds. Go to wheatschool.com. Now, on Monday nights, we do this fun show called The Agronomist. I mentioned it earlier. Tonight, we'll be talking about selecting a cereal variety. Peter Johnson will be with us, as well as Jeremy Boychin from Alberta Wheat and Barley Commissions. But last Monday, we had Tom Wolf and Jason DeVoe, and two guys that do a fantastic job with sprayer extension across the country. They do some really, really fun pieces on realagriculture.com called Spray Myths. And it's completely taking extension and turning it on its head, so to speak. By the fact is, we can be educational and fun at the same time. I think it's one of the reasons that we get along so well. They were my guests, and here's a portion of that conversation that you can find at realagriculture.com/agronomist. Here's the boys. Tom, you're always trying to help and assist agronomists and growers, trying to find some different ways of looking at some of the ways we've been doing things with our sprayer in the field throughout the growing season.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my dad used to tell me, don't ever become betriebsblind, which is a German word for a business blindness, which means you just get used to stuff. You know, you get used to what you shove in the corner. It's always been there. Might not belong there, though. And so he always encouraged me to have a fresh look at stuff. And I've carried that forward with me in my whole life. And it's a challenge, though. It's a challenge to be critical of things that some people think are pretty good. But you always just have to think of, well, what's our actual objective and are we meeting it?
Yeah. Is that one of the things, Jason, is to make sure you have an objective? Is that a part of the whole thing?
Well, Tom said this in the past, and I agree, not to turn this into the Tom fan show, but you have to measure things to understand them before you can change them. So until you're willing to step back and look objectively at what you're doing, you may not even recognize you have a problem. And that is really hard to do when nothing seems broken. One of the biggest challenges with anyone is first convincing them they have a problem so that you can offer them the solution to fix it.
Yeah. Tom, we're already getting questions. Janine wants you, can you please spell that word for us? What was it again?
It's one of those German compound words. It's Betriebsblindheit. Well, I'll write it down for you, Janine.
Made it a whole minute before Tom used a German word. I'm impressed.
He's just out there trying to outdo both of us, Jay. That's what he's doing. Okay.
So, I don't even try.
Tom, what do you consider to be some of those things where we, because there's a lot, it's not just spraying. There's a lot of things in agriculture where we hang on to a little bit the way we've done things. And that's a natural human tendency. Change is, it's difficult. It's hard. And you know, in farming, a lot of the things are passed down from generation to generation. Now, that really is an advantage in some cases, but sometimes it can sort of it could be a bit of a negative or maybe an opportunity for improvement. Where do you see some of those things in terms of spraying where maybe we could shake up the status quo a little bit?
Yeah, you know, it's a great observation. You know, agriculture, I'm comfortable in the culture. It is a it's a culture based on, you know, has a lot of values, right? And there's traditions, and of course, things we're very proud of in that regard. But at the same time, it's also one of the most science-friendly occupations, vocations, whatever. People are literate in the latest research. It's really kind of cool that way. So it's both extremes in some ways, right? And you know, what I always try to do is just find ways of improving the situation. You know, I try to say, all right, what are we trying to do here? And the pressures are great. Like we really are spraying more than ever, more times per acre than ever before. The weather seems to be, you know, holding us up most of the time. So we have to do more acres per hour. That's the currency we're talking about here. So everything that I do and say, I try to weigh in that reality. And one of the things I try to do is I certainly shut doors. I say, don't spray during inversions. Don't spray when it's too windy, et cetera. Don't spray at night. But for every door I shut, I have to open at least one other one so that we keep the acres per hour alive. So that creates this inventiveness of, okay, how do we get more done? Is that even possible? And that's how Jason and I have come up with productivity issues, right? Where is the productivity actually missing? And where can we, how can we gain it back?
And we're going to watch a video here in very, very short order that really showcases one of the ones where people try to make those productivity gains being speed. And it may be a bit of a mistake, but Jason, is it, you know, Tom's talking, you know, Tom's experience is a lot, of course, you know, really focused on the Western Canadian situation. Jason, do you see the same thing from a fruit and veg standpoint where your specialty has been?
Totally. I mean, he hit it on the head. When you close one door, you open another door. That's not just to keep the client engaged or, you know, to let them know that you're being realistic with the things you're asking them to do. But it's because every situation is unique. There are a whole number of opportunities and pressures that are unique to each operation, to each operator, so that when they say, I have a problem, you can offer four or five solutions that may partially address that. And then together you can pick the one that's either the most palatable or makes the most financial sense, or even if they're willing to make the change. And I think we have to be humble in the things we ask operators to do. Change should be incremental. You almost have to coax them along. Small victories that raise their confidence and pay dividends to encourage them to take the next step. Occasionally, we meet the courageous operator that wants to leap ahead of us. I've met a few, and they're fantastic and rare, but you have to almost restrain those people. And it all boils down to feedback. You know, and this is interesting. When we try to convince someone that we have the problem, you have to show them that problem. And if they don't recognize the thing they've immediately done has caused that problem, then they can't be convinced. So, you know, one of the biggest tools that Tom and I use in education is cause and effect. And water-sensitive paper is a great way to do that. It's quick and dirty, and it engages the operator. Any small victory with them is how we keep our foot in the door.
Well, and talk about getting feedback from the audience or from farmers. Tom, you know, when it comes to that idea of the pit stop of that sprayer downtime, you've often credited Manitoba farmer, I think it's Ron Cron, if I remember right, with kind of putting that, you know, kind of getting you focused on that topic as an example.
So much, so true. It's Ron that said, you know, when he first got his new tender vehicle, he said, yeah, it's like a NASCAR pit stop, 7 minutes. And I said, wow. And I'm inspired by guys like Ron, and there's so many in Western Canada, Eastern Canada, all over North America that are my actual, you know, motivation. You know, I learned so much from those guys, from those people, everyone. And, you know, they're the types that are doing what I said at the beginning. They're questioning the status quo. They're saying, how can we do this better? And it takes a certain amount of discipline to do that. It takes a certain amount of drive, right? And thinking out of the box and being original and coming up with solutions. And much of the time, like Jason said, these things are incremental. Like we find small things, but they can become meaningful. And, you know, many times they just give you joy. You know, there's always these little things. My dad always takes me, I talk about my dad a lot, but he always shows me the little things he's done to make his everyday life a little easier. On the farm, he always said they put handles and levers and you know, doors and things, and just said, okay, you know, this is now 1 minute faster or that much easier. And then it just gives us happiness, and spring's the same way.
And 1 minute faster over the course of, you know, 2 weeks of spraying, that's productivity, right? Like sometimes productivity gains don't need to be like this leaps and bounds, and you know, we increased our productivity by 33%. It's hard to find that kind of gain on a regular basis. It's sometimes that little small, little incremental sort of changes. And it's not changing big things. It could just be changing small things. It's like getting back to that FedEx delivery person where they're monitoring the exact movements. What is the most efficient way to get out of the vehicle, the van, to deliver that package? Jason, what are you going to say?
No, you're right. The devil's in the details. When I was a kid, I love this story because I'm telling it and I get to talk now. I had a paper route, and there were times that I would deliver this route and just zone out. You get used to repetitive behavior. And if something's working, you're not going to change it. And there was many a time that I would just sort of snap out of it when I was back at the house with an empty mailbag, but I couldn't begin to tell you where I went or what I did. So probably when it comes to incremental change and getting someone to be objective, a stopwatch, a pen, and a piece of paper is probably the biggest tools we could recommend. Stand back and look at yourself. Don't zone out, but really pay attention. And when you recognize how many times you walk around the sprayer, when you recognize how many times you run to see if the water's up to the top, and you add up how often you're doing that, those 1 minute become a lot of valuable time. And I won't jump the gun on this, but what you can do with that time is pretty sensational.
Yeah.
I love, for example, just the idea of having a data set, you know, having a data set and then being creative with its analysis, right? You can plot it this way or that way. You can tease this out of it or that. It's the science that we talked about earlier is in that. And a lot of, you know, our clients do just that, and they learn.
You have a calculator for that, don't you, Tom?
Yeah, I do have we have a productivity calculator on our website, don't we, Jason?
What website is that?
Well, let me gather some inspiration. It's
there you go.
He's trying to catch us. Hold it up.
Yeah, I keep on trying to catch you guys.
Spurred101.com. Paid for you, farmers listening, by your commodity group. So thank you very much.
So as you heard there, we had a great time. I encourage you to go to realagriculture.com/agronomist, and you can hear the entire show. It's actually about 75 minutes. So we had tons of participation from the audience, tons of questions, everybody really, really seeking and trying to improve on their knowledge base. And there was a couple questions for actually the second week in a row where our panelists were stumped. That's the quality of the audience that is tuning in to The Agronomist. And of course, if you are a CCA, you can register for CCA credits along with a bunch of other designations that are out there. So please tune in tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Mountain. It is broadcast at realagriculture.com/agronomist, as well on our social media platforms, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. We stream it, you participate. That's the beauty of it all. Absolutely. Okay, if you have any feedback at all on today's show, I want to hear from you. You can send me an email, shaney@realagriculture.com, or on social media. You can find us. Our username on both Twitter and Instagram is @realagriculture. Or you can call the Real Ag Listener line, 855-776-6147. Thanks very much, everybody, for getting real and getting connected with Real Ag Radio here on Agronomic Monday. We'll chat again tomorrow. Cheers, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Real Ag Radio, brought to you by Brevant Seeds, the latest technology locally tested. Brevant Seeds, easy choice.